Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
When you visit a state as big and diverse as Texas, there are a million different trips you can take. Let's say you've got an appetite for whitewater kayaking. You can get your own.
So this is why they call it Devil's River.
Trip to Texas. Or maybe you have an actual appetite. I'll take a pound of brisket, 6 ribs, 3 links of sausage, and a piece of pecan pie. Trip to Texas. Go to TravelTexas.com/get your own for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.
Hey everyone, Dr. Jason Old here, surfer, historian, world traveler, and your host of the Surfing Historian Podcast. This season, we'll be diving deeper into the nuanced world of surfing and examining the historical, cultural, philosophical, and even scientific elements of the sport we're all stoked on. So let's paddle out together and ride through the world of academia. This episode is sponsored by Foil Surfboards. Check out their amazing board selection at foilsurfboards.com. I'm personally a fan of the pill shape for small Florida days. Use promo code STAYSTOKED for a discount on a custom surfboard. Also, feel free to drop them a line if you're in Central Florida and want to join them on a surf session at Disney's Typhoon Lagoon. Joining me today from Brazil is Adrian Kojan. Adrian's a surfer, motorcyclist, and all-around journeyman. He's also the author of Pan American Soul, Searching for the Meaning of Life on a Surf Trip from California to Brazil, a book based on a diary that he kept during this epic surf trip. His book is featured on the surfinghistorian.com homepage, by the way, so be sure to head on over there and check it out. Oh, and while you're on the site, be sure to take a look at our awesome merch, as well as all the amazing surfing nonprofits you can get involved with. For today's episode, we'll be talking about his surfing motorcycle foray through Latin America in the late 1980s, as well as his more recent experience, which was a reboot of that original trip. We'll also see if he managed to find the meaning of life during either one of those epic journeys. I met Adrian through an odd series of events while conducting research for my PhD dissertation. I came across his name in a master's thesis written about surf travel through Mexico, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, and I was surprised to learn that as a foreigner, he ventured into Nicaragua at the height of the Contra War and attempted to navigate this tumultuous time and hunt down waves. So I reached out through social media to pick his brain a bit more about this experience, and we've since become friends. So now here we are, and I'm super stoked to have you on the show to share this information with our listeners. But before we get started, I want to personally thank you, Adrian, as well as our listeners, for being part of this episode of The Surfing Historian.
Yeah, hi, Jason. Yeah, you know, like, it's a pleasure for me to be here. I mean, we almost got together in Nicaragua. It didn't happen, but, you know, we're here, and thank you also for whoever is listening to this. I hope you enjoy. And I think we're going to have a nice conversation here because Nicaragua is a topic I love to talk about. And I'm talking to the guy that knows a lot about Nicaragua. Also, you know, he's a doctor. So let's do it.
Yeah. Thank you, Adrian. I mean, you know, yeah, I appreciate that. But, you know, let's be fair here. You were surfing Nicaragua at a very tumultuous time. And, you know, I was, as I've said to you, you know, I'm blown away that you ventured into that country at the height of the Contra War, essentially. So, but, we're going to get to Nicaragua. So, but I do just more generally want to know what compelled you to take this, what I call a surf motorcycle trip through, you know, from California to Brazil.
Yeah. You know, I was, I, I always was fascinated by the adventures of guys that did, you know, these amazing trips before I did. So I always like to read about it and dream that one day I was going to do something. I had two loves in my life at that point. That was surfing and motorcycles. So I go, hey, why don't I get to do something where I can enjoy both, you know? And at that point, I was living in California for 5 years. And I had a motorcycle already, had the surfboards. Mostly what I had to do is get a surf rack and just attach somehow the board to the motorcycle, which we see nowadays everywhere that happening, right? You go to Indonesia and that's all over. But at that time, that wasn't very common to get a surfboard on a motorcycle. But there were these guys in Brazil that came up with a surf rack that would go behind the motorcycle. It's different than the ones that today mostly go sideways. And I had them send one to me to California, install on my motorcycle and said, hey, I can do it. You know, I look at the map and I say, and then it was like I was young, 24 years old, and I had no compromises much. And I said, let's do it. And then I started looking how to do it. And it was a lot more complicated than today because you had to get to all the countries, or Brazilians, at least today, they don't need visa to any of these countries. There were 14 countries I had to cross. Now, at that time, you had to get all the visas beforehand. And so the first part of this whole thing was just to go to all these consulates in LA and get in line and see a lot of people hearing, no, you won't be allowed in our country either because you're a journalist or you're a priest or you're this and that. And they were really selecting people that could go in because all these countries were in kind of civil war or really war against other countries on the side. It was just very complicated. And then in Colombia, you had the narcos, like was at the time, Escobar was at his height. So it was like everybody would tell me, are you sure you want to do it? Do you really want to go to these countries? You know what you're getting into? But my take on it was, I'm a surfer, you know, I'm just going there to look for waves, you know, I shouldn't be any problem, you know, and just, you know, don't go look for trouble in the wrong places, right? Don't go look, oh, where is the gorilla camp? Can I go there, check it out? I mean, that'll be a problem, right? And then I was a little bit naive too, you know, I just said, oh, let's try it. And I was leaving, my wife is, we're living in California together. And the only thing I told, she's really adventurous girl. She would go with me, but I said, oh, I don't feel safe to take you all the way. Let me cross the countries that I consider more dangerous and I'll meet you in Peru. And that's what we did. She used to surf on a boogie board, bodyboard. And so from Peru down to Chile and then Argentina, Uruguay and Brazil, we did the journey together. But up to Peru, I went by myself because it was really dangerous, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, as I, you know, and I know I've mentioned this, you know, in the intro, but the way I came across finding out about your travels was, you know, through a master's thesis and then a couple other things I read. And you know, as I'm doing my research on Nicaragua, I'm like, man, this guy, he went to Nicaragua in like the late 80s, you know, in the thick of the Contra War, in the thick of the Cold War. And as you said, there was so much, very few individuals, vacationers, if you will, were making their way there. There were, you know, solidarity groups, of course, but people that were sort of within the orbit of the conflict, let's say, not, you know, as you put it, you know, you just wanted to surf some waves. And so yeah, I was, you know, personally just fascinated with, you know, your bravery. I don't know if that's the right word, but your courage and just, and so, you know, again, as I've said to you on multiple occasions, I'm just grateful to have you on the podcast to tell this story. And so, what you said, you know, you left California, you made your way eventually back to Brazil, which is where you're from. What countries did you surf in Central America? I know we've mentioned Nicaragua, but what are some of the other ones you surfed?
Yeah, getting back a little bit to what you said, like El Salvador was a country that before I went there, it was already a surf destination. A lot of people would go there for a period of time, but then when the war got really bad, everybody stopped going, right? And that's when I decided to go. So particularly the El Salvador, I got that there was no other surfer around, not one. I mean, the locals, I met a couple guys there, but no foreigners. And that Nicaragua, there was no information at all. All my research, I couldn't find information of people surfing Nicaragua. And Costa Rica, there were surfers, yeah. And Panama a little bit. But yeah, I jumped to Mexico. But Mexico, I surfed Mexico. Then Guatemala, there was no information, much information. At that time, we had this thing that was called the Surf Report. That was this newsletter published by Surfer Mag. And that was amazing information in there. People that would been to these places, they'll send the information to Surfer Mag and they'll put out on this newsletter, and then you would sign up for that. That wasn't, you couldn't buy it at the newsstand or anything. You had to sign and receive. So I bought the whole collection, right? And when I say there was no information, Surf Report had information for most places, but no, I couldn't, you know, talk to anybody that been there, to Nicaragua, for example. And so I just, I bought maps, you know, it's, it was a different time. You travel with maps, there were no credit cards. I mean, I didn't have a credit card personally, but even if I had, you couldn't use most of this place. There were no machines or that where you pass the credit card, there were no banks, no telephones. So I'd stay like a month without my family knowing where I was, even if I was alive, you know, because they'll hear all the stories of things happening and go, hey, you know, I heard from them after, you know, I got to Brazil, they were going, hey, what happened to him? He's not, you know, communicating. It's been too long. So it was just different, right? And, but, you know, I love riding motorcycles, and I look at the map and I go, oh man, imagine all the roads I'll go through here, all these mountains and these beach roads. And it would be, and then I got travel on a Honda XL 600R, which it's an enduro bike, right? You go off road on it. And so I thought I'll do some exploration, and the motorcycle will be the perfect thing for, you know, to get on the really bad roads or to go over sand or dunes, whatever. And so yeah, getting back to the countries you asked about, it was Mexico. I went to Baja California and then mainland Mexico and then Guatemala, where I did surf some really good waves, actually. I wasn't expecting, and beach breaks, but I got on a day that it was an amazing day. It was just offshore, 3 to 4 foot barrels, you know, all day long, you know. What else, you know, when I asked more than that, you know, it's in the mountains, I got in a really bad situation there in a big fight, and that's enough for a whole podcast. But, you know, at the time I was like, I just did this trip again. I will talk about that later. But the way I traveled that time was, I wanted to, not that I wanted to get in confusion, but I wanted to leave things in a different way. I was just, you know, I'll do things that are risky that I won't do it today. And there were consequences at times, you know. But then from Guatemala, I went to El Salvador. it was not the season, not the right season, but I got some really good waves there too, and nothing big, but just surfing alone, you know, then or with a couple guys, it was amazing. Go try to surf alone there today, impossible, you know. And then Honduras, there's no waves on the Pacific side. I don't think there's any on the Caribbean side. And then I crossed into Nicaragua, and that's I had a really good waves there, and I didn't know anything about the country, and that's where the war was, El Salvador also. And then I got to Costa Rica. It was more, you know, well-known, but I was surprised by the waves I found on the Caribbean side. At that time, the Caribbean side wasn't very well-known, and still today, I think the best waves in Costa Rica are on the Caribbean side, you know, the most powerful, most tubular. For sure, Pavones is an incredible wave, and a couple others on the Pacific side, but pound by pound, you know, powerful waves, the Caribbean will be more powerful. And then later on, I went to live on the Caribbean side and got to be one of the first ones to surf Bocas del Toro too, but that's another chapter, right? I wasn't on the same trip. But then I moved to Panama. It ended up there was no swell, so I went to Santa Catalina and stuff, but I never really surfed there. Colombia and Ecuador, I had a really hard time with the bureaucracy, local bureaucracy. They didn't want to let me in. They caused so many problems. And then Colombia particularly, if you watch Dolph, there is a bunch of shows showing like how Pablo Escobar operated. You see that all his sicarios, all his gunmen, they love motorcycles, right? So I had this amazing motorcycle, and people are telling me when they look at your bike, man, they're gonna you'll be dead, and they're gonna get the bike right away. So I had to hide the bike most of the time inside the hotel, the room, you know, and I didn't want to stay in Colombia for very long. In Ecuador, they only gave me a couple of days to cross the country, so not much surfing there. I mean, not surfing at all, you know, but And then I crossed into Peru, and that was amazing. Peru is so many places to surf, and the waves are incredible. And then I got to the next place was Chile, surfed some really good waves in southern Chile, and then moved to Argentina. Argentina, I didn't even went to the coast. I just crossed the country because the information I had, and I still think is the... I mean, I never heard of any good waves in Argentina. So at that time, I wanted to get to Brazil at that point, at the end of the trip, you know. But still, I went to Uruguay, got some good waves in Uruguay, and then got some good waves in southern Brazil before getting home. So that's about the waves. It was more or less a lot of waves.
No matter what you're a fan of, Texas has the trip for you. There's the trip to Texas and the trip. Or maybe you're the kind of fan who'd prefer a trip to Texas or a trip. Either way, go to TravelTexas.com/get your own for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Yeah, it sounds like it, you know, and just again, you know, I keep thinking, you know, man, this guy is traveling through these countries really at some of the height of some of these more tumultuous times for sure. And, you know, again, we're going to get back to Nicaragua specifically because I'm really intrigued about that, just that experience in and of itself.
Yeah.
But so,
well, just one thing, Jason, so maybe somebody is listening and don't know that, and I didn't say, but the whole trip took me, it was like over 15,000 miles in 9 months on the road. So it wasn't that like I was driving, I would stop at whatever I could. And if there was a good swell, I would hang there for a week, 2 weeks. And then other places I'll move faster for whatever, no swells or too dangerous, according to what was happening. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I do want to eventually get into your book because, you know, the book Pan American Soul, which by the way, we have on surfinghistorian.com featured there. And really stoked on the book, but because that was essentially your diaries, unless I've misunderstood that. Yeah. But before I get into that though, because I do want to hear, I'd just like to know how you lugged all of this stuff around, because you went to Chile, you were in even southern Peru, central to southern Peru, some of these places, the water's cold, even in California. So how did you carry wetsuits and surfboards and even just clothes in general? How did you pull that off?
Oh, I just had this big bag, you know, a waterproof, where I stuff everything in there. But like right on the first, right in Ensenada, when I crossed into Mexico, the surf rack broke down because I had too much weight, right? So I had it welded, the rack. And first stop, first place I went, camp at the beach, I go, hey, I gotta, you know, take down some of this load. And then I had so many books with me, man. I was carrying books, you know. It might seem strange for a surfer, but actually there's a lot of surfers that love reading, right? And I thought, oh, I'll be alone. So many places travel for so long. I got to take a bunch of really good books. But I had to leave them at that place and a bunch of other stuff, you know. I just had to make a big pile and burn all that, not to leave as trash at the, there was this solitary. I was the only one at the beach. So it was, I had two side bags the bike carry more weight than should most of the time. And then when I got my wife on it, even more. So we broke down the chain in the middle of Atacama Desert because of too much weight. Yeah. But I tried to mostly cut down to only have things that I really needed. That I could survive in, so like you were in an accident, because I had no information, no cell phone, I'll go like, hey man, I'm in middle of the Baja or a desert in Peru or a jungle in Costa Rica, whatever, something happens. And if I fall down, so I have to have a blanket, that these blankets that protect you from the water till somebody comes save me, if somebody does. And I have to have some kind of prepared food there. And so all that, there was some stuff that I had to carry, even if I didn't want to use it, right? It's like, I don't want to use it ever, but I have to have it with me, right? And that's the tools also, you know, got to have the tools to fix the motorcycle. And then a board short and and a couple of t-shirts, and then one vest, one whole thing for driving the motorcycle. And then as far as a wetsuit, I had a short john. So I surfed Peru and Chile, southern Chile, on a short john. That was cold, man. But I don't think I could do that now that I'm 60 years old, but I just been there and it's cold there, right? But at that time, I had so much energy, I just jumped in the water. You got to remember that before there were wetsuits, people surfed in Santa Cruz, San Francisco, or in other places around the world without wetsuits. So if they could do it, that's the way I thought, I can do it, you know? And so a short john did it for the whole trip. Yeah. Uruguay was pretty cold too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's some cold water. Uruguay, Argentina, southern Chile for sure.
Peru, you know, the water's cold too. It got really cold. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, and not to digress too much, but you know, I think about that as well. Before really, Jack O'Neill kind of created, if you will, the wetsuit for you know, surfers and others to use. You know, I'm thinking, man, these people are surfing, you know, like you said, Northern California was very cold water. So yeah, you were very adventurous, very courageous, very, a little crazy too, by the way. And you know, so I do want to get into your book. You know, in looking at the cover of the book, and for those of you that buy it or look it up, you'll see what I'm talking about as well. But the motorcycle is packed, you know, the back is loaded. And it's just a cool picture. And that really helps, you know, give that image of what you know, I called you a journeyman, you know, and you really are. And so tell us a little bit about this book, Pan American Soul. And, you know, the subtitle, Searching for the Meaning of Life on a Surf Trip from California to Brazil. And I think we all want to know, did you find the meaning of life as well?
It's still searching. That's a good excuse to keep traveling, right?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. So, let's get into the book. It, you know, again, correct me if I'm wrong. It was, you know, based off of some diaries. And, Motorcycle Diaries, the Che Moto Experience just comes to mind. But,
that's a great book. I didn't, I did read it afterwards. I didn't know when I did it that, you know, like I said, information was scarce at that time. Nowadays you punch motorcycle trip, there'll be a bunch of books, right? Including mine. But what happened is, before moving to California, I moved to California to be a surfer full time, right? And I couldn't, right? I had to work. So I was a carpenter there. But in Brazil, I tried to go to university. And so I did study history, and I studied journalism and agricultural engineering, but never majored in any of this, right? So when I thought about doing the trip, I say, you know, I like journalism. I used to have good grades in school for writing, and actually was the only good grades in history. And so it would be great for me if I could, you know, get something out of this trip. So right before I took off, I said I study agriculture engineering. Just so you understand, I went to a college, Orange County College, a college in Orange County, to see if I could do a course on something to do with agriculture, because my dream was to have a farm in front of a perfect wave. Maybe I find a farm in a perfect wave on down the road, and it's crazy, you know. You're young, you don't know what you're gonna do. So, but I went there and. And then I end up looking at another course that was called Travel, Write, and Sell. And I go, oh, man, that's great. That could help me out. So I took this course, and I got to remember my native language is Portuguese, right? So But the teacher, as it happens, when we have a great teacher, man, that's something that, you know, it's the best thing in life. I'm all thankful to teachers, you know, because they help me so much in my life. And so it was a woman, right? So she liked me, my ideas and stuff. So she got, I'm going to help you write a carry letter to Surfer Mag, right? And Surfer Mag was like the Bible of surfing, you know, all surfers all over the world. So, and I was going, hey, I'm nobody. I never wrote anything. And I'm going to write to Surfer Mag, asked to do something. But yeah, that's the way it works. You know, if they like your idea, because like you said, it's kind of crazy idea, they might get interest. So I did write them. And you know, I got a letter back. Yeah, we liked your idea. Why don't you come down and, you know, to our office? That was Paul Holmes, was the editor-in-chief at the time. And we'll meet and, you know, you talk about it, you explain what you're doing. So I went to their offices and they were really nice. And they go, yeah, we can help you out, not with money, but we'll sponsor your film. You know, film at the time was very expensive to buy. And my budget for the whole thing was really tight. So the film was great. They gave me film and they said, and you send it back and we'll develop it. And then if the photos are nice and if you make it to Brazil, we might do an article, right? I said, great, man. You know, that's how I wanted to hear, you know. And so it happened that I to make sure I'll get some reasonable photos, I went and took a photo course, a really basic one, and I bought the photo equipment. At that time, I didn't even have a photo equipment, right? So I bought a Nikon body and a couple lenses. And I said, with that and I'll get a diary, right? I'll write down the diary, take the photos, and at the end, I hope to have a nice story to tell. What happened is that became actually my profession. My life turned around after I did that, because I got to Brazil and I sent I made the article for Surfer Mag. It was Matt Warshaw was the editor at the time, the one that is the editor in chief. He was the editor of the article, right? So he helped me polish it a little bit, but the photos, they liked it. And then I did the same with a magazine in Brazil called Trip Magazine. And that was my start into the journalism profession, you know, and couldn't be a better start, you know, starting right at the top, right? But right after that, Surfer Mag, and then we get back to Nicaragua. So of all the places I crossed, maybe the craziest one was Nicaragua, because of the war was really intense and nobody knew anything about it. So when I got back and told Surfer Mag, hey, there's incredible waves there, they go, do you want to go back there again? Because nobody wanted to, right? So yeah, I've been there, I can go back, you know. So they paid me. That time they paid me to go, right? And so I bought a bigger lenses. And so next year I went back to Nicaragua after the trip. But after, I'm going to jump a little bit to keep on the same track here. So I went to Nicaragua, and there's a whole story we can talk about that. But to go to Nicaragua, you didn't have flights to go there directly. So I had to go to Costa Rica, through Costa Rica. And I had a friend in the Caribbean. His name is Kurt Van Dyke from the Van Dyke surfing family. So after I went to Nicaragua, I went to visit him, and he goes, oh, do you want to manage my hotel? Because I just had a problem with the current manager, and I need somebody to manage my hotel, because I got to take care of my farm in Santa Cruz, California. And I go, hey, man. That's incredible offer. You know, I'm riding the front of one of the best waves in the Caribbean or Costa Rica or the whole world. Really, Salsa Brava is this amazing wave. And at that time, there was nobody there. So it's like surfing almost alone every day, perfect waves. And so I took up on the offer, and that made me my journalism career stop for the 3 years that I lived there, because I had to not take photos, because it wasn't very nice thing to be taking photos of the place. You know, you had to be part of the local politics. Although you want people to come, but there was enough people for the hotel. We didn't want too many people, right? So, and for this period of time, I stopped writing or photographing much. But then there was this big earthquake that hit Costa Rica, and we lost everything. And I had to go back to Brazil. And when I got to Brazil, I got this offer from this OP, Brazilian OP, was a brand, OP brand in Brazil. They wanted to sponsor, and that was something new also, that a surfwear company would sponsor a guy to write a book. So I went down, and my wife's family had a house in Maresias. So I went there and stayed there like 8 months writing the book and surfing. It was great. And then when I wrote the book, and then I started working for the Brazilian surf magazine called Fluir, which actually was the biggest magazine in Brazil. And started at the bottom as assistant editor, and then went climbing up the ladder, and ended up being the director of the magazine, and raised my family out of that, and got to travel all over the world, you know, doing assignments, covering the world circuit and all that. So from what I mean is, from this trip, I end up doing that for the rest of my life. Travel, write, and sell.
Well, and you know, and here we are in 2023 talking about this trip, you know, and I think that's the beautiful thing about life sometimes, when we really step out and, you know, follow that something that compels us so much, something we really, really want to do, or follow our passions, or, you know, however we want to describe it. Life does tend to take these odd turns in our favor. And, you know, your story really is an example of that. And, you know, so I do kind of in line with talking about the book, you know, so again, I, you know, just encourage the listeners to go out and get it. But if they had to read one part of the book, you know, they get the book and they're like, where do I start? Do I start in California at the beginning, or what's the craziest story to go talk about or to go find and read in that book? Where do you recommend the reader to start?
When it comes to family vacations, there are a million different trips you can take. You can get your own trip to Texas. Or if you prefer a vacation from your family, you can always get your own leave the kids with grandma. Yay! Trip to Texas. So go to traveltexas.com/get your own for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
No, you got to start at the beginning, right? Because you got to understand. I tried to explain where I come from. What's from at that age, right? Right. We're talking about 35 years ago. But what was coming? The book starts in 1980, actually, and that's when I was 18 years old, and that was my first move to California. I moved to California. Actually, twice. So I go up and I'll go to California and I buy a motorcycle there, a smaller one, Yamaha 250. Actually, I bought it in New Orleans where I had an aunt and moved and crossed the states to California. And then I got a friend come from Brazil and we go, hey, let's go travel the whole California coast on this motorcycle. You go holding the boards. My friend holds two boards, right, with his hands. And we are packed it also. But we're just kids, 18 years old, and just going from beach to beach, you know. And then we go, hey, why don't we cross into Mexico, you know. So we cross into Mexico, and we went camping on the desert. And that's where I really got the taste of the adventure. You know, that was the first time I going.
That was, oh, yeah, that I was, can, that was I your can test do run. That. Yeah, that was the test run to make sure, you know, see how things work.
Yeah, so later that was, you know, that was, so it's important. That's a nice story right there. But yeah, if you, oh, let me just read a couple pages and stuff. The part in Nicaragua where I go and surf Puerto Sandino and, some people say that I don't want to get this thing on me that I did discover a wave or anything, you know, because it's hard to really know. It's like when you say America was discovered by the Europeans, right? But we don't know other if the Chinese came here first or the Vikings, or really wasn't discovered. There were people here, right? So yeah, I don't like that thing that, you know, who are you to say you discover something, right? But for sure, I was one of the very first ones to go and surf there, if not the first one. But in the circumstances the book, the chapters, because I had to tell so many stories, it's not a very long one, but it's a very intense one, because I went and surfed what I call the forbidden wave. Why is that? Because Puerto Sandino, it's a port, right? And so during any war, port installations, they're really really strategic, right? Really protected. So I got there, and then I saw the waves from the hill. And I wanted to surf them. So there was a military base closing the whole area. And I tried to get in, talking to the sergeant at the gate. And he was just going, are you crazy? And I go, sorry, you can't, you know, this is a military restricted area, you know. And, but, you know, like I said, at that time I was in a, thinking right sometimes, you know. So I just go, oh, okay, you know. I went back to the place I was staying. I couldn't really sleep. I was just going, fuck, the wave, I gotta surf that wave. So next morning I wake up really early and I go to the same place, but I go around the base and I hide the motorcycle at the bottom of this hill. And there's, I don't know, people that have been there, you probably have been there, there's this big river that goes out. Could have been crocodiles, strong current. You never know what's in the river, right? But I just say, okay, I'll go jump in the river, paddle across it. Then there's a stretch of sand. And then you got to get in the water and paddle across the break and to surf. It's kind of distance, right? And at the mouth of the river, there was a speedboat with a machine gun on the deck, right? So, and then I was trespassing into a military base during the war to surf a wave. That's basically what I was doing. And but the call was so strong, and I was going, oh man, I'm gonna do it. So I left the motorcycle, jumped in the river, and the river will be of a different size depending on the tide, right? When I jumped, there was a pretty good stretch to paddle to the other side and the current and all that. So that I tell in the book, right in the middle of the river, I was going, uh-oh, shoot, what did I do? You know, I don't think I should be here now, but I go, now I'm here, I gotta go all the way to the end. So I got to the sand, run across the sand, jump in the water. And funny thing, Puerto Sandino is the last. But I was there January, and I didn't know. At that time, we didn't know much about swells and where they come from or anything. I'm sure nowadays, even because I talk to people that if you get a really strong swell in Hawaii, or you will get there and the rides will work. So that day, there was a little left by the barge, but there was this barge sunk at the, it's not there anymore, but for a long time, there was a barge sunk at the tip of the point where the river empties in the ocean. But the rides were working really nice on the other side. So the banks formed with the rides, and there was offshore wind. So this really long ride, hander. So I went there, and, you know, like, when you're surfing alone, you get two waves every 10 minutes. So in an hour, you surf a bunch of waves, right? So after an hour surfing, I was going, hey, I shouldn't push my luck. You know, nobody came, get me out, no shots, nobody's fired any shots at me so far. So I better end my session, you know, while I'm ahead. And so I got this last wave, and it's also in the book. It was like a... I didn't do anything on this wave. I just crossed the whole thing, just saying, hey, I did it, you know, just feeling that moment. So that was a moment that I feel it right now, like I remember forever, you know. It was so intense. Got to the beach, he done the whole thing, run across the sand, paddle across the river, got on the motorcycle and just, oh man, got out of there as fast as I could. And it was amazing, you know. That's a good part of the book, and definitely one of the high moments of the whole trip. Yeah, I was surfing this wave, that, and then it means so much. And then later on, looking at the history of Nicaragua, I went there many times after that and wrote about it. And then I found out that the CIA had planted mines on ports before I went there. So imagine if they would think I was a CIA surfer, you know, or something. I didn't know, but it was really risky what I did, because, you know, and I just thought, what, you know, what kind of harm a surfer can do, you know? But yeah, a surfer working for the CIA can do a lot of harm. Yeah, I got to read this article from the Washington Post saying that the CIA planted a bunch of mines on not that port, but a Corinto, which is another port.
And yeah, it's a little farther north, but yeah, still. You're right. And what better cover than to be a quote unquote innocent surfer just looking to, you know, happens to want to surf a wave at a very strategic port, you know? So yeah, when, you know, looking back on it, it wasn't the most wise decision, but it certainly made for an excellent part of the book.
Yes, it is. It was fun.
And you know, I know that this was, again, as we've been talking about, this was in the late 1980s, but you did recently kind of, I called it a reboot. You, like, you redid this trip. Did you go to all the same places? Did you start in California, end in Brazil? Like, what, how did, was this reboot?
Yeah, what happened is
and by the way, not to interrupt, but why do it again? You know, if it was,
yes,
you know, what compelled you to reboot this, you know, incredible motorcycle experience?
Yeah. What happened is, the point I'm in my life right now, I always worked as in magazines, right? I wrote mostly for surf magazines, but adventure and but mostly magazine, never a newspaper guy or a TV guy. Or and as we know, the magazines, they're all gone, you know. Surf magazines, they're so at a certain moment I was out of a job, out of a profession also, you know. And I was seeing all these people, all the kids and stuff. Now you gotta sell, you go out and you film and you make your own content and you post. And I go, at first I was resistant to that because, you know, when you get old, you tend to be resistant to some things. And not old in a sense, I'm considering myself very young, but there is a resistance, right? It's normal that because, you know, I love surf magazines mainly because it's been my life to read magazines from since I was a kid, right? And then to work on them and raise my family with editing a surf magazine. And suddenly there's no surf magazines anymore, right? So I'm kind of lost in life at this point, right? I was at that point. So, and I was seeing all the kids doing all this thing, get a cell and go out and film and post on Instagram and do your own documentary, your own channel. So as a challenge to myself, and I go, hey, I gotta learn how to operate on this new universe. I gotta recycle myself, right? And then at the same time, this whole time that since the trip, my ties with Latin America, they just kept getting stronger because I lived in Costa Rica. My daughter was born there. On another episode in my life, I went back there, lived there for 2 years when you could edit magazines from a home office. I did Costa Rica as my home office. And then I traveled to Peru over 14 times and Mexico so many times. So I had friends all over this places, and I'd seen how the surfing had changed. So I want to tell the history of what surfing did, good and bad, to these places, right? Because many times all these places that I went to and there was nobody, now that you go there, there's a whole surf town there, right? And that's good and bad at the same time, because so it's good for the economy sometimes, bad for the environment, good for the culture, and in some instances, bad also. Surfers sometimes will bring drugs, violence, prostitution to places, but they are at the same time can bring nice things too. So as a journalist, and now much more than the first trip, I had the eye of I wanted to go surfing, but I really wanted to go there and document what happened between my first trip 35 years ago and now. I wanted to go and document that. And also how different it was to travel at that time and now. So I wanted as a subject for a documentary, I thought it would be great to go and do the same route and compare, you know, retell the first trip and do a new trip and see what happens now. So I'll get to see all my old friends, how they're doing, surf the waves, and there's also be adventure. And then I was at first I thought about doing it in a motorcycle. Actually, I was gonna do it right before the pandemic, and I had Triumph, the motorcycle brand, was gonna sponsor me, and I was gonna do it. My son, he's a surfer also, but then the pandemic hit and we lost the sponsorship and you couldn't travel and all that, and even the my financial situation got even worse, you know, as most everybody after the pandemic. So when the pandemic started, let us go travel again, I go, hey, either. And then by then my son had a girlfriend and was doing his job. He couldn't go. And I go, I'm going to do it alone. And I don't know exactly how, but I jumped on a plane to California, got there. No, not a cent in my pocket, just a list of friends from before, you know, and then new friends that I started making there. And I got help here, a place to stay there. And then I just got things moving, and suddenly my visa was to expire, and I had to jump on the road. Not much money, but I had an old van, which is not really the kind of van you imagine for this trip, right? It was a Toyota Sienna, year 2000. No seats on the back, so I put my stuff in there. I put a mattress, a cooler, and a stove, and like I said, a mattress and some tools, and my surfboards on the top, a longboard, two other boards for one for fun waves, one for more radical waves, and then I had the difference. I couldn't take a motorcycle. I couldn't do it on a motorcycle, so I was going. I took a electric bike. A Murph electric bike, which is a cruiser with these fat tires that go over sand with a surf rack. And I say, I get to places, and my van wasn't four-wheel drive, right? So I'll stop the van and do all my exploration, all my going around in a electric bike. And that worked just great. The bike took me to some amazing places, and people loved it, and I had so much fun. And then it was amazing. The time that I was out in California, I couldn't surf much because I was working a little bit, and I was working the whole time, but making some money on the side and then getting things ready. And so when I got to start the trip, I wasn't on my best shape for surfing and anything. And right, the first waves were like, I surfed Baja California was okay, nothing big. But when I got to Pascuales and Puerto Escondido, I got there and it was like 8 foot, 10 foot, 15 foot waves. And I go, oh man, I can't surf these waves. I can't surf them anymore, you know. But with time during the trip, I started getting on better and better. And by the time I got to Salsa Brava, I got some amazing waves there, really happy with that. And then also I'm not, you know, 6 years old, your body doesn't go as fast as your mind. So, but that was part of the trip, you know, getting back to being a surfer full time. And then I did a lot of filming and photographing also. And I met all these friends from the past and new ones. And it was like a current of help that kept me pushing. And I still don't believe, but I made it to Brazil 9 months later, 28,000 kilometers or 17,000 miles in that van that broke down a bunch of times. And I ran out of money a bunch of times. And but it was an amazing trip, you know. And so I got all this material to do this documentary, eventually even a book again. And but yeah, that's the reason I wanted this time I jumped on the road much more as a documentary than a surfer and adventure. That was part of it, but I wanted to document this whole thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a beautiful story. And, you know, I personally enjoyed watching this second round and, you know, through social media and all of that. And, you know, you really, in a sense, you took this skill set and, you know, your experience from the 80s and brought it into the 21st century and, you know, kind of adapted it to, you know, our more, you know, internet based society, you might say. And, you know, so yeah, it was really cool, you know, to watch that. And I'm looking forward to what comes of it. And the other thing, you know, that you mentioned that I also found, you know, not only fascinating, but I connected with personally is the reasons behind it as someone who is no longer a teenager or in your 20s. And you said you did it as a documentarian. And that's really similar to how I did and continue to do my research now through surfing, through the lens of surfing. You know, I love surfing. I love getting out in the waves, but I view these experiences differently now that I'm a little bit older. And, you know, I look, this experience, the one in the 80s, the one that you just recently did is really inspirational. And Adrian, I want to go ahead and give you the last word, but I would just, you know, maybe for myself and the listeners who I think are probably inspired by this, you know, incredible journey. And like I said, I'm going to give you the last word, but what advice do you have for somebody who wants to just take to the road in the same way you did? What, you know, what would you tell that person if you were sitting with them?
Yeah, as an editor, a surf magazine editor, I had so many people come to me with an idea or a plan for this expedition or that, and they'll see it and they'll ask for money or help, a sponsorship. And I'll tell them that don't, if you want to do it, don't wait for that, because very few people get all the help or will be in the ideal situation to take off on the road. Just really go and do it and try. I mean, doesn't mean you got to do something crazy, abandon your family or something. It's not like that. But when that window in life gives you that opportunity, just do it. You find ways. You find people to help you. You work during the, like I came out. I came and work start appearing for me to do other things like writing, which is my work. But you can do other things. You can. There's so many ways of making it happen. But one way that's not going to happen is if you only sit on your sofa and dream about it, right? It's good to dream because it always starts with a dream, right? But if you don't get out there and it's always better to have tried and fail than to regret you never tried, you know? So that's the advice I give to people. Hey, you got a dream like similar to this, or I mean, any dream, just go and try, because the ideal situation to do it, it might happen to a few people, but really not, because like take these guys, the astronauts, right? When they go up, you think everything's ideal, right? But we know that thing will explode up there sometimes, right? And they know there's that chance, right? So you got to take the risk. That's my advice.
If you enjoyed my conversation with Adrian about his motorcycle foray through Latin America, I'd like to invite you to check out my next episode, where I'll be joined by Canadian sports scholar, Dr. Bettina Callery. Bettina and I will be talking about Indigenous sport participation and her work with the fully Indigenous surf program on the island of Unamaki, more commonly known today as Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. This surf-centered initiative has developed programming specific to Mi'kmaq culture. So if learning about these types of incredible organizations inspires you, this will no doubt be an episode you won't want to miss. We also want to take a moment to thank Foil Surfboards again for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check them out at foilsurfboards.com. And while you're there, use promo code STAYSTOKED for a discount on your purchase. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Surfing Historian. If you're stoked on these conversations, be sure to share, like, and subscribe to never miss an episode. And don't forget to check out our killer merch at surfinghistorian.com. Proceeds go to help keep this amazing podcast going strong. Until next time, stay stoked.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where OneTravel comes in. With OneTravel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip, flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
No matter what you're a fan of, Texas has the trip for you. There's the trip to Texas and the trip. Or maybe you're the kind of fan who'd prefer a trip to Texas or a trip. Either way, go to TravelTexas.com/get your own for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.